All right. This is the second tradition. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And with that, I give you Carrie D. from Bend, Oregon, New Horizons. Thank you, Carrie, for being with us tonight to talk on tradition two.
Thank you. That wasn't enough time. I on Zoom, when I'm speaking, I like to put all of my newbies in the front row. So that I can, yes, that's control issues, but it's also so that I can see face expressions. So if I'm talking over somebody, I can go back. So I didn't get you guys all arranged, but I have a screen full of people that it looks like I know and love. Hi, Mike. Hi, Pete. Anyways, my name is Carrie and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I'm currently working steps 10, 11, and 12, or the maintenance steps or the growth steps or however you want to put that. So tradition two, this is actually one of my favorite traditions to talk on. And it's because, you know, I've been taught that, that how not to sound arrogant, which is something that I really need work on still, but I've come a long way, is that you want to share things that you've done not so well. And this is a tradition that I have not done so well. And so I'm able to share experience on what to not to do in my own, with my own experience instead of with your guys' experience, because there's some traditions that, I talk about how other people have done it wrong, but this one, I get to talk about how I've done it wrong. So where I've learned and where I've grown. And so yes, for those of you who are new or nearly new, tradition two is the one that is shorter in the long form than in the short form. I don't know, alcoholic, right? There's all sorts of different reasons why it's said, but basically, when we adopted the long form in 1955, it was still very much run by the old timers, Alcoholics Anonymous, their groups, their founding members, right? And by the time we went to condense them into a form that will fit on the wall, right, on the window shades on the wall, more had been revealed, I think. And a non-alcoholic, Earl Treat, is, and maybe he is an alcoholic, I don't know, Billy would know more about that, but he's somebody who started thinking, well, you know, maybe you guys should add that second piece. So the second tradition in its long form reads, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. And the short form adds that additional line. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And I think that's to keep those, you know, egos in check, right? Which I still need. And so let's break that down. I like to keep things simple. How does God express himself? If the group is one spiritual entity, right? On the fifth tradition, and we'll learn about that in a couple of weeks. If the group is a spiritual entity, having but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, how does God direct the group? Well, right here, God speaks through the group conscience. So what my group does is we have business meetings. Sometimes those are called group conscience meetings. We handle other business other than just voting in my business meeting. We have reports and stuff like that. So we call our home group business meeting a business meeting. And we do have group conscience within that business meeting quite often. Not every business meeting do we have a motion and take a vote, but quite often, if there's a motion that is on the floor, that vote happens at the business meeting. And why? Is because that's when God is present. Not that God's not present in the other, in the regular meetings, but when there's a decision to be made, I don't know what God's will is. I don't think you know what God's will is, but we know what God's will is, as long as we have an informed group conscience. So hang on just a second. Taylor, are you taking this dog for a walk now? Wonderful. Thank you. Sorry. So the group conscience is God expresses himself through the group conscience. So that means that in my home group, we have the business meeting is monthly. And the reason why we have a monthly business meeting, and I know some groups have quarterly business meetings, that's fine too. Some groups have steering committees. That's all amazing. And we'll get to that in the fourth tradition of autonomy. My group has monthly business meetings. The reason why my group has monthly business meetings is because we want to be God-led. And if, you know, God speaks through the group conscience, I get an opportunity to have my 3 minutes share every day if I want to, right? God only has that one opportunity once a month. And I think 12 times a month is sufficient for God having his way with kind of directing us. And when we silence that to only 4 times a year, I don't know. I want to make sure that God is directing our group a little bit more often than that. So that's why we have monthly business meetings in my home group. So for our group purpose, there is but one, and I have a highlight on one: ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. What does that mean? Well, if the group conscience at the business meeting elects me to be a leader, that means that they are trusting me as a trusted servant to carry out their group conscience. That means that if they want me to use a timer when I don't want to, because God spoke through the group and God says, nobody needs to share for longer than 3 minutes, give them another 1 minute time, and then they have to, you know, wrap it up. But my hero is in the room, right? Or the old timer who has 40 years of sobriety and he's onto a good, like he's saying something really good. If I govern and say, well, I'm going to put that personality before the principal because he is onto something, right? That's like saying, God, I know what you have dictated through the group conscience, but I know better. You know, and so that's me putting my self-centered fear, and the same with the newcomer. It doesn't have to be the old timer. What if I have a newcomer who, oh my God, if they get shut down, they're going to go drink. First of all, that's not going to happen because they get shut down. That's going to happen because they're not done yet. But what if I don't know, right? And what if I'm going, oh my gosh, this newcomer is crying. They need to vent. They need to, you know, to get it off their chest. And I'm going to tell them to wrap it up. No, I can't do that. Again, that's putting my own self-centered fear of being liked, of all that stuff before God. God's dictated through the group conscience. So that's what that portion means. Now for me, you know, this isn't just at group level, right? This is at AA World Service level. So I talked about this group pamphlet before. This is conference approved literature. This is AA conference approved literature. So everything in this group pamphlet has been voted on, and a variety of alcoholics from the United States and Canada, from the United States and Canada have expressed opinions on every stage of the development. This is 80 years of experience. So it's a little bit more experience than just my own one person's experience, even at 11 years. And I think I know it all. This is more experience. This is God as he may express himself through the group conscience. So if I think I know what's best, but this says the opposite. I have to trust God. I have to go with what this says. If I really don't like what this says, and Billy will get into this later on in the concepts, I can write an agenda item and I can send it in and I can see if the rest of the US and Canada agree that this needs to be changed. And I have the right to do that, but I don't have the right to go against God, as he may express himself in our group conscience, on my own, because I think I know better, right? And so what does that look like at group level? Well, let's go back down to group level, up to group level, excuse me. That is a pet peeve that I catch in others. Let's go back up to group level. A few years ago, I'm with my home group that I originated with, but I've been a home group hopper a little bit, I'll admit. And a few years ago, I left my home group. Now, before I left my home group, we had some predatorial issues going on, okay? The group was basically a men's group anymore because women were afraid to go there. I had a solution. I knew what to do. I had just gone to a safety and AA workshop and I knew what to do, right? I bring it to the group and God spoke through the group conscience and said, nope, it's not what we're gonna do. And the group was wrong, but each group has the right to be wrong, right? And I didn't trust God. I didn't trust that God knows what he's doing, even when I think that I'm right and the group is wrong. And I ended up leaving that group. Now, my solution would have fixed that isolated situation. It would have. But God had bigger plans. And when I was gone for 2.5 years from that group, I still attended the meetings. Oh, hey, I was not going to leave the newcomer women there alone with those men, right? I still attended their meetings. I just was not part of the group anymore. But I, in the process of that, their group conscience, God, stayed in that group, even when I left. And by the time I got back to the group, by the time I joined the group again, every group has to hit a bottom sometimes to correct the behavior, just like every drunk has to hit a bottom to get willing enough to change their behavior, right? And God's ultimate plan was not just to put a Band-Aid on the isolated situation that I thought that we were going to fix. God's plan was for the group to get sicker and sicker and sicker and start having all of the predators from all over town start joining the group. And, you know, it was like a buffet for these predators. And the group hit such a bottom that it resulted in not only a group inventory for the first time in years, but a safety and AA workshop where we had two trustees come into town and Madeline P spoke. I mean, it was the biggest workshop I think my town ever had. Plus now that group has a safety plan. And you can go and look at our safety plan and our bylaws by going to newhorizonsgroupaa.com about us page. And that would not have happened. That would not have happened if my motion would have went through, because it would have been one Band-Aid after another. So I don't always know what God's plan is. I don't always know. And I have to trust that group's conscience. So I'm going to... don't have time to do that, but I will show you a little slide, a screen share. So I'm going to screen share just real quick to show you. This is the illustration in the group, in the 12 Traditions Illustrated. And I love this because my 12 Traditions Illustrated has this guy right here, has long blonde hair and a skirt because it's me. Because here's my group in the group conscience, right? And here's my group in the business meeting and everybody's got one idea. And then I'm standing up going, I know better, I know better. And God rises up through the group conscience and he's telling me, down girl, you don't know better. I got this. And I love this illustration. It's probably my favorite. It is my favorite illustration in all of the 12 Traditions Illustrated, because it's me. It's me. And it still can be me. I am the loud here. So it says here, What about that annoying character? This is talking about me. This is in the 12 Traditions Illustrated. What about that annoying character who's always sure she's right? It even says she. If she's wrong, then she will, if she remembers the first tradition as well as the second, go along with the decision of the group conscience. And I've had to do that. And not only have I had to go along with the decision of the group conscience, but at group level, when someone else, at one point, our group made the decision, not me, I wanted announcements to keep going. But at one point, our group made the decision that we had to stop all announcements, no more announcements at group level. And this guy made an announcement about, I mean, he was the district corrections chair and he needed help. And like, we like corrections was going under and all this stuff. And, you know, I really wanted to let him go. And I said, you know, and I had to actually, the secretary had to tell him, I'm sorry, but we don't have announcements anymore. And he's like, what do you mean you don't have announcements? What happened? I'm part of this group. I don't know. And I stuck up for the group conscience, even though I was the only one in the minority opinion. And I said, I'm sorry, but then you should have been at the business meeting. We don't have announcements. Please sit down. And I didn't say, even though I think we should, I didn't do any of that. You know, I didn't, because I got to trust God. I got to trust the group conscience. So I'm going to read page 28 out of the AA group pamphlet, because that at the bottom of page 28 is where we come to what is a group conscience, right? And I'm just going to see a show of hands for those of you who I can see, because I want to ask this question. How many has been in a room, I don't care, via Zoom, in a church basement, in the park, in the library, how many have been at an AA meeting, not a business meeting, okay? Not a business meeting, not a group conscience meeting, an AA meeting where a group conscience took place and people raised their hand. I want to see how many people have seen that happen, where a group conscience takes place at a meeting. Okay, that's what I thought. So what you have, that's not a group conscience. That's not an informed group conscience. What you have is an ignorant majority. Now, I have first heard the word ignorant, and it's in the service manual. And I thought, how rude, that's a bad word, right? Ignorant, if you look it up, it means without information, right? That's all. It just means not informed, uninformed. That's all it means. And you can't have an informed group conscience at an AA meeting with attendees. Those aren't the group's members. And so let me read what an informed group conscience is on the bottom of page 28. The group conscience is the collective conscience of the group membership, not the meeting attendees, the group membership, and thus represents substantial unanimity on an issue before definitive action is taken. This is achieved by the group members, not the meeting's attendees, the group members, through the sharing of full information, individual points of view, and the practice of AA principles. To be fully informed requires a willingness to listen to minority opinions with an open mind. This is going to drive everybody in the room, including me, nuts. On sensitive issues, the group works slowly, right? Because it's better to do it right than right now. Discouraging formal motions until a clear sense of its collective view emerges, placing principles before personalities. The membership is weary of dominant opinions. This is me. This tradition protects you guys from me, right? I have to keep my mouth shut. That's hard for me to do. The result rests more than on a yes or a no count, precisely because it's the spiritual expression of the group's conscience. So the term informed group conscience implies that pertinent information has been studied. This is pertinent information right here. This is 80 years of experience, strength, and hope. That is pertinent information. And all views have been heard before the group votes. So that is AA's conference-approved definition of what an informed group conscience means. And I do have, I don't know about you guys, but my home group, we use these important decisions. We use 2/3 majority. And we use Robert's rules, because it for us, it provides unity, because everybody knows what to expect. Everybody knows how the voting is going to happen. And I'm going to put that in the chat, or maybe Dee can, but I'm going to put that in the chat. And I'm also going to put the definition for an informed group conscience in the chat. And then I will turn it back over to Billy, or back over to Dee. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Carrie. And again, some of you had questions in regards to that group conscience, some of you knew GSRs. So be thinking about those questions that we were talking about before we started tonight. This is a perfect opportunity to ask those questions to Billy and to Carrie regarding your traditions and concepts. So, and there is a link that we put in there moving forward that everything from now tonight and also from the past and in the future will be in one file. So you don't have to collect a bunch of different things that Carrie's posting. It's going to be all in under traditions resources in that link that I put in there. So the group pamphlet's in there, what she referenced, page 28 of the informed group conscience. And Billy also with the service manual will be in there. It's in there also already. So from last week. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Billy. I'm going to go ahead and read concept two as I introduce Billy. So concept two, when in 1955, the AA groups confirmed the permanent charter for their general service conference, they thereby delegated to the conference complete authority for the active maintenance of our world services, and thereby made the conference accepting for any change in the 12 traditions or in Article 12 of the conference charter, the actual voice and the effective conscience for our whole society. And with that, I want to say thank you, Billy, for being here tonight. I give you Billy to talk about concept two.
Thanks. I'm Billy, I'm an alcoholic. Welcome everyone. Thanks, Carrie, for speaking on tradition two. Dee already read the concept. So what I wanna start by, I just wanna see what time I start and write that down. She already read the concept. So I wanna start off by saying, I heard a little of the before the meeting discussion. And so it just is interesting to me that Bill W. and Dr. Bob did their job for AA of the future. They made sure that the trustees were not in charge. They turned AA over to the AA groups. So I've said it so many times now, I'm almost tired of saying it. I really don't care whether you like the word people, hate the word people. I don't care if you don't like the plain language big book or love the plain language big book. It's really your opinion is none of my business. But when it comes to all those subjects, Dr. Bob and Bill W. lived up to their side of the bargain. They did the right thing. They left it to the groups. Now, I'm not going to comment on any band that someone wears around their wrist that says, what would a particular God do, right? Could be any God, right? But I've actually seen bands in the drunk junk stores that I hate that say, what would Bill W. do, right? Which I think is like the most arrogant piece of, if you want to call it jewelry or whatever you want to call it, accessory, for anyone to think that they know definitively how Bill W. would have felt on those issues is arrogance. It is complete arrogance. For you to tell me that you are convinced that you know what Bill W. would have done on issues that you can't read about in AA literature. Like, I'm willing to tell you what Bill W. did while he was alive on issues that he dealt with while he was alive that are documented in conference reports. But I am never willing to say, well, you know, if Bill was here today, this is what he would have thought. And you know what the other thought about that is? If you really embrace all three legacies, nobody cares what Bill W. thinks about the preamble or the plain language big book. They don't think he's special, and he has as much of a vote as you or I do, which is in our home group. That's what Bill W. would have today if he was still alive. He would have one place to vote in his AA home group, and he could hope that his GSR is going to the district and assembly. The big breakdown this year is not concept one. All this discussion we're hearing, I think, is great because it shows the complete breakdown of the home group structure. It shows the complete breakdown of concept two in our society. It really, really points out how we have become an organization of loosely aligned meetings that way, way outnumber home groups with GSRs who actually participate. And I want to read a couple of things out of concept two, because Bill did not mince words when he wrote this. I want to go to the first paragraph of, it is self-evident that the thousands of AA groups and many thousands of AA members scattered as they are all over the globe cannot of themselves actually manage and conduct our manifold world services. The group conscience is out there among them, and so are the needed funds. And here, I'm going to tell you to circle a couple of words. I'm going to tell you the definitions that I saw in the dictionary. You can look up your own. The power of the groups and members to alter their world service structure and to criticize its operation is virtually supreme. I just want to say that again. The power of the groups and members to alter their world services structure and to criticize its operation is virtually supreme. Well, criticize, which seems to be, it doesn't make you an alcoholic, but it tends to be a common thing that a lot of us have in common. We are good at criticizing. Doesn't make you an alcoholic, but it's a human tendency that a lot of us seem to have. But criticize means to indicate fault or express a judgment. So Bill is saying in concept two, the power of the groups to indicate fault or express a judgment, and that is, what does he say? Is virtually supreme. Supreme meaning superior to others. A lot of authority was left to the groups. But if the groups don't show up, then they're abdicating their authority. It goes on to say next, but an ultimate authority and responsibility in AA groups' world services, if that is all there were to it, could not amount to anything. Nothing could be accomplished on that basis alone. In order to get effective action, the groups must delegate the actual operational authority to service representatives who are fully empowered to speak or to act for them. And then it goes on and talks about what the trustees first did. Second full paragraph of page 9. At first, the trustees of our new foundation took jurisdiction over money matters only. Little by little, however, they were obliged to assume many other responsibilities because I could not alone discharge these on a permanent basis. Hence, I gave the trustees added responsibilities and corresponding authority as fast as possible. It talks about the book being transferred from Works Publishing to AA World Services in 1940. And then it goes down a couple of paragraphs and says, thus it went with every one of our world services. I still functioned in an advisory capacity in our headquarters operation, but the trustees were in full legal charge of all our affairs. As Dr. Bob and I looked into the future, it was clear that ample delegation to the board was the only possible way. And then the next paragraph is maybe could be argued in the top 10 most important sentences in all of the concepts. Notwithstanding these delegations, Dr. Bob and I quite properly feel that we still held an ultimate responsibility to AA. So why is that line important? Because what did Bill call the General Service Conference? The permanent successors to the founders. And what was the founder's job before the General Service Conference? It says right here. It says, notwithstanding any of these delegations, Dr. Bob and I did quite properly feel that we still held an ultimate responsibility. So the founders had ultimate responsibility because the group still looked to us rather than their little known trustees. Now let's do a little poll. Kerry did one. I'll make it kind of easy. And I'm just going to trust your answer. And you don't have to raise your virtual hand. You can just raise your regular hand. There are 21 trustees. How many of you could currently name more than five? Well, that would be unanimous then. None of you. If I missed one or two, then one or two of you. Out of 87. Which is probably how it's supposed to be. That's what Bill wrote. Because the group still looked to us rather than their little known trustees for leadership in AA's world affairs. So who do the groups look to today? They look to the General Service Conference. We make the mistake of thinking that the General Service Conference is just the area delegates. It is not. The General Service Conference is made up of basically four classes of delegates. Area delegates from the 93 areas, trustee delegates, non-trustee director delegates, and staff and executive delegates. We'll get to concept four, but per concept four, since AA was left to the groups have the biggest voting percentage, almost 70% of the 135 voters. But think about what I started to state, what I said in the beginning. You know, people love to use the term New York, you know, and I know I say it like a New Yorker, but people love to use the term us and them. And whenever they're mad at something that happens at the General Service Conference, what do they blame it on? They say, oh, New York did that. Can't believe what New York did. I would tell you New York didn't do anything. Except beat Boston in three games in a row this weekend. Sorry. But other than that, New York's not responsible for AA's problems. In fact, if I drew you a map of the US and Canada, and I divided it into the eight regions, and I showed you how those trustees are dispersed, it definitely wasn't New York. New York didn't change the preamble. New York didn't vote to have a plain language big book. In fact, this year, it didn't even happen in New York. Can't even blame that. It happened on a Zoom like we're on right now. But 93 of the people who voted for that were direct representatives of the AA groups. So we don't have a concept one problem in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill and Bob did their job. And they did what very few leaders in organizations do. Very rarely do founders step aside. Rarely. Anyone ever been to an AA meeting where someone gets introduced as the founder of the group? Yeah. I always say founder is the F word in Alcoholics Anonymous. We had two co-founders and we don't need any more, right? Everybody is equal. But we have a complete breakdown of concept two. And if you're from a group or an area who's bothered by anything that happened at this year's conference, and here's what I'm going to end with and throw out a challenge to you. And I'll throw the same challenge out to me. I know that all 89 of you are very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am very thankful for your service. But that means that you travel where alcoholics are. That means that you are probably a couple of times a year or more at gatherings separate from your home group where there are a lot of AA members present. And if you're like me, some of those AA members who aren't even in your home group have become good acquaintances or good friends of yours. But because people pleasing is probably one of the top five character defects of all alcoholics, our natural inclination, I'll just paint the picture. You just left the drunk junk room, right? And you bought a pair of earrings or something with a circle and triangle on it. You just walked past, like, I don't know, some hospitality room that a recovery house is making chili in, right? You just walked past that. You go to the speaker meeting, and then afterwards, you go to an ice cream parlor or you sit down in the hotel and you're having ice cream or dessert with like 20 people. And you hear a couple of them complaining about AA. But what don't you want to do? The easy thing to do is just to go along with them and say, oh, you're right. AA is crazy. I don't know how they made that decision. I don't know what they're up to, blah, blah, blah. That's the easy thing to do. The harder thing to do is to ask the person who's complaining, how did your group feel about that? What happened in your group when you had that discussion with your GSR? And if they didn't have that discussion, what can you do? I mean, people tell me, how do I be a great GSR? I'll tell you how to be a great GSR. Get a group that doesn't have a great GSR to get a great GSR. Make your district the most alive district in your area. Make sure groups realize that by not participating, I mean, let's face it, again, I really don't care what you think about the preamble or the big book. But if we were able virtually at the General Service Conference to change the preamble and to approve a plain language big book in the same General Service Conference, what's going to happen in the next 5 years? Because I'm going to take you back to 1995, 94, sorry. I want to be accurate. Joe of Joe and Charlie, the Joe from Tulsa, Oklahoma, the second Joe. His wife was the area delegate that year for Oklahoma. She just celebrated 45 years, I think, Phyllis M. She's an amazing member of AA, 80-something years old and still active as can be. But that year, she introduced a floor action to protect the first 164 pages of the big book. She wanted them to be in the same category as the steps, the concepts, the traditions, and the warranties, so that only 75% of the world's AA groups could change that in writing. And what happened when she made that? You can go listen to the recordings at GSO if you have time one day. They don't distribute them, but you could listen to it there. Trustee after general manager got up to the microphone and said, "We'll never change our 164. That'll never happen. You don't need to do this." Well, my message is everything is on the table at the conference. And this year's conference should be a wake-up lesson to the AA groups. So thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for being here tonight. Really appreciate it. Look forward to the questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Billy. And thank you, Carrie, both of you. Once again, we've got questions that started coming in. I'll start with mine while you guys have a chance to kind of roll through and see what you've got as well and give people time to put some in. So here's one on concept two. The person says, was the Grapevine preamble change this year a conference approved action? Did it have a 2/3 approval of all eligible delegate, staff, trustees, board members?
So I hear this kind of hair splitting going on. So I want to give a very kind of technical, careful answer. We throw the term conference approved around a lot. It's almost like being at a, you ever at a speaker meeting at a convention and somebody says they used a lot of non-conference approved. I don't know what that means. The conference doesn't approve alcohol. It doesn't approve anything like that. It approves literature and some AA policy at a very high level. Prior to this, the preamble was not conference approved. It was owned by the Grapevine, published in the Grapevine. The Grapevine gave AA World Services permission to publish it in their literature. When the change for the preamble kept coming to the Grapevine board, I think they made the right decision. They said this, whether this is conference approved or not, this is a large matter of policy that will affect AA as a whole. So rather than us just voting to do it or not do it, we're going to send it to the conference. So what the conference approved is changing the preamble with the new wording so that now it is conference approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. And Carrie, I just sent you one. Did you get any others?
I actually have a few, but I didn't get one from you. Maybe I did. I got the one that you just sent. There's a couple in here that are super easy. Let me blow through these. Question, can you help me understand the long form versus the short form of the traditions? Why were the short form written and when? So the long form is our actual tradition. You know, the short form didn't replace the long form. The long form is our tradition. If you turn to the back of the 12 and 12, you can find and I don't like the term long form. I would call them the original form or the actual tradition. and, you know, another thing that our conference did this year that I actually really appreciate is the 12 and 12 no longer is going to have the actual tradition hidden in the back at the end of every essay, because I don't know how our fellowship like got to this, but like for some reason we think that the traditions are found in the 12 and 12, like that those are, Bill just wrote 12 essays. Those are just like some stories. Those aren't our traditions. The traditions are found in the back of the book. After every essay from this point on the new published, on the new 12 and 12s that will be published, the long form will be right there at the end of every essay. So we won't be able to skip it accidentally anymore. So that's a good thing. So those are the actual traditions. Now the short form is like an abbreviation. so that we can fit it on the wall and so that we can read them in the meetings. No newcomer is going to sit through the long form because they're long. Like, I love Bob D says, you know, the newcomer's attention span is that of a gnat. Like, how are they going to sit through a long form of the traditions? So what it is just merely an abbreviation. Instead of saying General Service Representative, sometimes we say GSR. That's it. They're not, it's just an abbreviation. Billy uses an analogy with the stop sign that I love. He, I think, talks about this being the third tradition, but because the third tradition is very controversial because the short form has a bunch of, it's easy to find loopholes. The long form, not so much, right? So when you pull up to a stop sign and you see, it's not just a stop sign, but it has lights all the way around it and they're blinking and they're flashing. Have you guys seen those new stop signs? Well, those stop signs don't mean stop any more than the regular stop sign. The regular stop sign doesn't mean, yeah, you can roll through. You know, they mean the same thing. Just one of them is easier to see, right? So it's just an abbreviation. So I hope that that helps with that one. And then the next one is, what is Drunk Junk Store? It conferences, and even like there's one in Portland, you can go and you can buy like cute, I don't know, AA calendars, and none of it's AA. It's all made up stuff. None of it comes from conference approved literature, but they're cute. They're like, you know, you can buy circle and triangle earrings. You can buy Bill Wilson's girl, you know, t-shirts, stuff like that. So the warranties, what are the warranties? The warranties is what concept 12 is made up of. So in concept 12, it's made up of our charter, which has six warranties. The 12 traditions, the 12 steps, and warranty 12 are the three things that can never be changed without a three quarters vote written approval by the groups. The rest of the concepts, I believe, can be changed, but concept 12, which is the warranties, they can't ever be changed without that additional. And so when Billy was talking about the steps being lumped in there, or the first 164 being lumped in there, that's the warranties are just, they're just concept 12 is basically how I would put that. And now D's, the one that you just sent me, D, that there are no founding members. Oh, is that to me or Billy? That's to me. That there are no founding members of groups. Is that because our leaders are but trusted servants? Okay, I guess that would go to me. I don't consider founder the F word. I consider fundraising the F word in Alcoholics Anonymous. My area likes to fundraise, and that's something we don't do in AA ever. Our literature is very clear about that. But founders, yes, is because of tradition 12. If we had a founder and we placed them ahead of, we don't have celebrities in AA. The founder of the group is just, has the same voting power as the newcomer with one day. We're all equals. There's no second class citizens. And back to you, Dee.
Thank you. And Billy, I threw a couple at you.
I have a few questions. Yep, I have a few questions. So what does the GSR do when the people in the business meeting, especially the chair, doesn't embrace 36 principles and holds other positions in other meetings? Well, I wouldn't worry about the other positions in other meetings because they're going to do what they want to do. You can just share your experience. But what I would do is use things like the preamble and the big book as an example as to why the group needs to be involved. It's things like that that are going to get people to want to talk about those things. I've been told by a number of long-term people in service that once you hold a position, GSR, DCM, that you should never hold that position again because it deprives another of being of service. Is there a concept tradition that can guide me in this? There's a mention in the service manual that past delegates shouldn't hold other positions. I think you should give somebody a chance to hold it. But if it's been a couple of years, and no one else wants to do it, I don't see any problem with someone doing it. I'm visiting districts that are withholding money from GSO because they change things and cannot get them to understand that we did that. We've been spreading the word, but no one seems to be listening. Well, here's what I would say. You're going the wrong way on the upside down triangle. It is none of your business as a DCM to change a group that has voted to withhold money. That is their right and their group conscience. That's their autonomy as given to them in tradition 4. The group didn't vote for the area to stop sending money to GSO. They didn't vote for the district to stop sending money. The group decided what to do with its own money, and that's up to the group. What I would do, though, is that is a serious wake-up call. I would let the group know that that should be their last thing they do. Like, if you told me that you stopped sending money, but you didn't write a letter to tell them why, then I would think that you've gone a little too far. Or why haven't you written an appeal? Or why haven't you invited your delegate to come? But as far as the DCM or whoever else visiting those groups, you have to walk a fine line between letting them know that there's other things they could have done before the power of the purse, but also respecting that your job is not to be the police of that group. That group gets to embrace tradition 4. Let's see. Why would we subject the English 1 to 164 to a worldwide vote compromised of a large percentage of non-English speakers? As we know from the myriad problems with the Spanish edition, it matters a lot which language you read in many. If not all, translations can be improved to come closer to English original. So who knows if the internationals would be voting to lock in? Well, let's be very clear. And I'm going to go through this again because it's been changed a couple of times since the original charter. So there are 4 things currently protected. The rest of the concepts were thrown in there a bunch of years ago. So originally, it was the traditions and Article 12. Then it was the steps, the traditions, and Article 12. And today it is the steps, the traditions, Article 12, and the 12 concepts. But then let's go about a discussion that a couple of countries are asking the World Service meeting to happen. It is not a vote of all groups in the world. These concepts were written when there was one structure and we were headquarters. When asked about this regarding changing, GSO has said that no, this would be a vote of all the registered groups in the United States and Canada. As for the comments about translations and the points made in the question, I would agree. Translations become a big issue. Because let's just look at America and Spanish. I didn't know that there were so many different versions of Spanish spoken in America, but there are. There's Castilian Spanish. There's Mexican Spanish, but then there's also a Castilian Spanish spoken in Mexico. We have Puerto Rican Spanish, and we have lots of others. And when you try to translate word for word, sometimes things get a little messed up. That's why we have such debates over translations. Talk to any deaf person and they'll tell you about the ASL translation and tell you that it just doesn't match. But translations are difficult. There is no doubt about it. But right now it would be 75% of the groups registered in the United States and Canada. And a very important note, 75% of the groups who respond. So it does not give the power of apathy to the groups that if enough groups don't respond. No, it's 75% of the groups who respond. Let's see. Speaking of the, okay, that's not a question. That's it. I don't see any more questions, Carrie, for me.
Okay, next question for me. Does your group conscience allow, by the way, just real quick, because I have the floor. I love seeing your guys' home groups in the names. Oh, I love it. It means that you are a member in good standing of a home group. I love it. Does your group conscience allow observers, and do those observers get a voice? Our business meetings do allow observers, but our script in the beginning of the meeting, the chairperson reads, makes it very clear that you, if you are not a group member, and you are when you say you are, you can register at any time to be a group member by putting your name on our roster when we pass it around. If you are not already on our roster currently, meaning if you didn't already sign our roster last month, then you are an observer. You do not have a vote, and you do not have a voice, and you do not get to comment. Are the traditions more important than the steps, and why? I would have said 3 years ago, of course not. The steps are the foundation. Like, without the steps, we have nothing. And I would have argued to the death. Somebody said something to me recently that really made me change my mind on that. The steps, without those, I might die. Without the traditions, we die. And so I'm not going to answer yes or no, but you take that for what it's worth. And then the last question I have is, are the groups required to send in money to GSO? How often? I assume these are registered groups, and I also would guess we send money to GSO so that they may serve all our groups. So no group is required to send money anywhere. If your group wanted, you could just have a pizza party. No groups are required to send money anywhere. And once you register, that just means you have a voice and a vote, and that you are connected to AA as a whole. You don't have to support monetarily to have a voice vocally, but most groups, well, I would encourage your group to contribute to GSO, to your local area, to your local district, and to your local intergroup. The amount in which you contribute, please, please do not use the sample that's in the Money and Spirituality Mix pamphlet, because that's all it is. It's just a sample. It is not a suggestion. It's just showing you what a group could do. But if a group does exactly what that sample does and keeps it at that forever, they're not a healthy group conscience, because a healthy pie chart fluctuates and goes up and down. For example, if your inner group isn't doing good, your group might start contributing more to the inner group. For example, my home group, ever since the pandemic, we haven't contributed a dime to our local area or to our local Oregon Area 58. And that's not because Area 58 or the district has done anything wrong. It's because Oregon Area 58 and District 5 have more money than they've ever had in the history of Oregon Area 58 and District 5, because it's not being spent because of the pandemic. Whereas our local intergroup and our general service office, we have to still pay our employees. We still have to pay our rent. We have to pay our phone bill. We have to pay our computer, you know, so there's still, so definitely your treasurer and your GSR should be talking constantly, at least quarterly, to your group about where the money should go. And that should constantly be changing up and down, up and down, up and down. With that, I pass.
All right, I have two questions. Can a group request information on where and how monies are distributed from World Service? So number one, World Service does not make distributions to anyone else. They pay for their expenses, and what's ever left at the end of the year goes into the reserve fund. If the reserve fund has too much money, which is over 12 months for more than a year, then they have to budget to lose money or decrease the price of literature. But you don't distribute money up the triangle, just down. This is why this tendency of areas providing kind of assistance to groups to pay the expenses of their GSRs, you're just funding a group that is not self-supporting.
Amen.
Another thing was a quick question. I confused on what I thought I heard said that the first 164 hasn't changed. I believe in the second edition where ex-alcoholic was changed to ex-problem drinker. Yes, they were like super minor changes between the first and the second edition. I'm talking about the 164 since the third and the conference action for the fourth edition that the first 164, the doctor's opinion and the forwards would be kept as is, intact, no changes. But yes, there were minor changes made between the first and second edition. I was told to announce, just so everybody knows, on October 24th, on Sunday night, we're going to have a workshop about being part of the solution of being active in general service. And for all those who want to complain about what happened at the General Service Conference, that's who it'll be geared towards. So you can send a flyer to all of those people. How did this all happen? Well, it might happen because you don't have a GSR, or you have a GSR that doesn't go, or you don't let your GSR talk to your group about what's going on in AA, or you have a right of appeal, and we'll talk about carrying out that right of appeal, and you have power of the purse, but that should always be the last thing. So that's it. Why is money sent to areas to help fund the delegates' expense to the conference? The areas send money to the conference, and then that money is used to pay all the expenses out of one account. So that's how that goes. Each area can send money to the conference. There's a suggested contribution to fund the General Service Conference. It's a cost about $8,000 each delegate. Some areas send $1,500, some $2,500. But all that money goes into an account at GSO, and then they pay the expenses of each person who goes. That's it, Dee. Thank you. Thanks, Kerry.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much for being here this evening. So Billy said on the 24th, we'll be here. So 6 p.m. We'll be going over how to be effective in utilizing your group with your GSR and how you can be a part of the general service structure and submitting that appeal. And then also Kerry is going to be here on the 31st, which is kind of quite fitting that we're talking about these formats, the preamble and stuff like this with the group conscience. She will be doing on Sunday the 31st, the group autonomy. So if that interests you, we'll see you guys back at Sunday at 6 p.m. Same ID and password here. So we're going to go ahead and end out with the responsibility statement. And do know that if you, before we go, if you cannot access the recording in the chat, for those of you that are just joining us, the recordings are put into a folder that is a Google Docs link. We have all kinds of goodies in there for you, from the service manual to other links that Kerry's talked about. Billy also from time to time will throw it in there. I will email it to you. Just take down my email address that's here underneath my name, and I'll email it to you if you're not able to grab it out of the chat. So with that, we'll take a moment of silence and we'll close out with the responsibility statement. I am responsible. Anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible.